following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
Let's tidy up this tangle of film by putting it on a reel. Here is a motion picture film, 1,000 feet, 16,000 separate photographs.
Welcome, everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Real Debaters Podcast. I'm Michael.
I'm Rob.
And hello, listener. This week on the show for you, we are talking disaster movies. And this inspiration came from the new Alive movie, Society of the Snow, that's dropped on Netflix in the last week or so. Have you seen the trailer for that yet?
I have. I was trying to think.
Scanning. Yes, I have.
I thought we were doing this because I feel like it's very contemporary, because I feel like everyone thinks the world's going to end soon.
That's also...
because I feel like the news is just a fucking dumpster fire lately.
Rob, that's exactly why. Totally. I have that down.
Like, it's supposed to be super topical, right?
Yeah. It's very concurrent with the everyday society of human. I saw the trailer for Society of Snow. Then it got respect at Golden Globes, which... Golden Globes are a predictor of the Oscars, right? You start there. If you're, if you can pull there, then, and you can create the narrative that you deserve the win, then you can pull
it. So that's the documentary about, like, the rugby team that crashes in the Andes. Is that what it's about?
I thought it was a documentary. It's a feature.
Oh, it's a feature.
But it's in Spanish.
But does it have an Ethan Hawke in it?
No, it doesn't.
Then pass.
No. Okay, Dead Poets.
Well, no, because he was then Alive.
I know he was my captain. No, it's a feature. It's an international non-English film.
Okay.
Right? It's all done in Spanish. You can listen to it in subtitles if you need to, but it's done chronologically. Instead of what's the best time to shoot this and what's the most financially sound way to shoot it, they shoot start of movie, middle of movie, end of movie in that order. It's the old, like, 30s way of doing a movie. It's not cheap. And he, the director, I can't remember his name for the life of me, but he has looked into the clothing, the brands, the thread counts, the style. He took pictures from the accident, from the surviving family.
So they all
members.
Had to wear uncomfortable polyester?
Yeah. It looks really, really good. And I mean, Sean has made me listen to all the podcasts about it, which, like, they really get into the eating of the friends and family members that were on the plane.
Yeah. I assume it tastes like pork.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I always want to assume.
Yeah, it's not going to taste like beef, because beef is a rudiment animal with four stomachs, and a human is...
Yeah.
Humans are close. Humans are close.
Zip your fly up. Your science degree's out.
What are you talking about?
I'm just fucking with you.
I have a. Oh yeah.
No, there it is. No, but
I do have a hole in my jeans. I thought maybe that's what you're referencing.
I'm gonna just stare at your.
I was like, is that in the
now.
Wide shot right now?
Kind of. No, but anyways,
it's a good thing I wore underwear today.
All these things kind of came out in the last week, and I was like, disaster movies are fun. They're over the top. They're could be true.
Yeah.
Couldn't be true, right?
People love them.
They do. I think they're, like, if you want a blockbuster movie that's not, you know, rooted in superhero right now, disaster also works.
There's two that work, in my opinion. The disaster and then the post-apocalyptic.
Yes.
So which they're almost tied together.
You can make one with both.
Like, people love that shit.
It's interesting. It's futuristic. It's all those things. Yeah. So that's why I was like, let's talk about it. We've played it into some other episodes before, but we've never really... doing a deep dive. So that's what we're going to do for you today, listener. But before we get into it, this is the part where we talk about us.
Yeah.
By us, for us, for you.
Okay.
So the thing that's coming that we want to tell you about, which I just talked to Kenzie last night, we are doing trivia part 4, rom-com, romantic comedy trivia at Rudy's, February 13th, the day before Valentine's Day.
That's the best time to do it.
Right? Because everybody's clamming. Everyone's fighting to have the most romantic night possible. We're going to make it so that you can have a romantic night adjacent to Valentine's Day, because Valentine's Day starts the Friday before to the Friday after.
Or it's a giant fuck you to Valentine's Day.
Exactly.
Because you hate it. And that's cool, too. And I just want to say, I'm very upset that the rom-com, the classic rom-com, has been under attack for the last decade. And we need a motherfucking resurgence on this shit. There's been a few gems out there.
So we're going to do 4 rounds. We're increasing
Hot Tub
trivia.
Time Machine, you can't do that movie today.
No. Great White Buffalo, can't. Not going to happen. Are you Hunter S. Thompson? It's my favorite line in the whole movie.
It's like the Terminator!
Chernobyl. It's going to be 4 rounds of comedy.
Yeah.
It's going to be like comedy adjacent stuff, what's a rom-com? Like, what is the actual definition of a rom-com?
Yep.
What's a meet cute? Questions like this are going to be asked. We're going to be giving away prizes. Rudy's is going to give away a gift certificate. We're going to give away another gift certificate to send to the movie. So basically what we're doing is you can bring your date night, mm-hmm. who doesn't like going out for Valentine's Day, mm-hmm. have four rounds of trivia. Tickets are going to go on sale, I believe, in the next week or so.
It's a great venue, too.
It is.
Awesome
venue.
We're
going to do it in the lounge. We need to bring some vitality.
It's high fucking brow.
It is. It's good drinks. They've got an
awesome food menu. Awesome menu.
Fondue menu now. So
that's fondue.
That's fondue to trivia.
That fondue is fondue at trivia.
There's something in there. There's a joke somewhere. Yeah. February 13th, we'll let you know when tickets go on sale. But the easiest way to always know and always be in the inside of the trivia is to either subscribe to the show or just follow us on social media. All that stuff, all that shameless shit is in the show notes. Sorry, listener, just ate lunch. So follow, subscribe. Please just subscribe to the podcast. It's the easiest way, and it's more entertaining to be found out than doing it through the social media stuff. So February 13th, 7 p.m. is going to be start time. Circle it on your calendars, and we'll see you there. Besides that, we don't have any other movie night. We have movie nights coming up. We want to do a Scott Pilgrim thing sometime, maybe in late February. So stay tuned for that. Yeah,
we're gonna do
that. Yeah, we're gonna do Scott Pilgrim bingo and trivia. Handsome Daughter.
Who's your
again.
Favorite bad guy cameo in that? Chris Evans.
Well, yeah. Seven, technically seven Chris Evans. I don't go anywhere without my stunt team. What's up, bro? I'll show you a kickflip. He's so good in that because he doesn't take himself seriously.
He plays a great villain.
He does.
Like in Gray Man, he's the best fucking villain.
He is such a good sociopath.
Have you ever seen that meme where it's like Chris Evans with just a mustache and Chris Evans with a beard? And it goes, what kind of cop are you getting today?
Ooh, good. Ooh.
Yeah.
I like that.
And the funny thing is somebody does the post and it's Chris Evans responding and goes, what kind of cop are you getting today? So he's the one who actually said that, which is fucking gold.
To not take yourself so seriously. You know what? Like, speaking of that, Joe Coy got shit on for the Golden Globes. I'm sure everybody's
Yeah, you're allowed to make fun of Taylor Swift. She's not a
deity.
She's not untouchable. Fuck off.
I'm of the mind that that is the room where you're with your peers. Right. So it'd be the easiest, like any sort of media convention where you've got to be on. You can't really do that shit.
But it's like, a Golden Globes.
It's Ricky Gervais has been poking fun at all of them for so long. Yeah. And
that's the first time she's even been at the Golden Globes.
Do you know why I look forward to that? Because when I see someone of that A-list caliber being able to laugh at themselves. Yeah. I have a little bit more respect for them because they don't take themselves too seriously. Right. You're not in the stratosphere to me. You understand a joke. You understand a little bit of poking fun. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, the joke at
even the cobbler laughs at himself at those.
Right?
And he's the most serious actor in the history of the world.
He walked off into the wild blue yonder to make shoes. We're speaking of Daniel Day-Lewis, listener, if you don't know who we're talking about. And he can laugh
I actually
at himself.
Couldn't remember his name for a minute, so I was like, cobbler. That's what I'm going to say, because I brain farted.
I got you. Let's start the show. Step off this mortal fucking coil. What'd you watch this week?
What did I watch this week? I'm going to talk about cinema.
I'm going to drip all over myself. Go
on. Excellent, excellent. Dribble as you go. I went and saw Wonka.
Tell me about Wonka.
So I didn't realize it was a musical until I was in there. But
you were
I was
one of the ones who got tricked. I like
but
it.
But I was okay with that.
Yeah.
Right? So I went with my wife and I brought my daughter.
Oh,
And the funny thing is we just finished reading Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh,
And she loved that book. So she's like, you know.
Who was her favorite kid?
Pardon?
Who was her favorite kid?
Charlie. She likes Charlie.
Okay. All right.
But she loved how, like, you know, even though she's like not even quite five yet, like, you know, the irony of like these kids being punished for being bad kids was not lost on her, and she kind of got it. And it's weird. I actually noticed her behavior has been better since we read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, because
she doesn't want to be an Augustus Gloop or
Veruca Salt, or Violet Beauregard or
Mike
TV. But
that's a child of the 90s right there, listener.
But either way, Roald Dahl was, I mean, that book was written in the 60s, bro.
Oh,
late 60s, early 70s.
Being growing up 80s, 90s movies.
Timothée Chalamet is.
Yeah?
Dude, he just went even higher up in my books.
Really?
Because the fact that he can sing and dance and pull off that role that well it almost puts him in a different category. And I know a lot of people are comparing him to like a to DiCaprio and those types of things.
Could be the second coming.
DiCaprio
sure.
can't sing and dance.
He's never tried.
I don't know if he can. Maybe he can, but again, to your point, he's never tried. But I think that it's such a that role was such a departure from
Arrakis,
from Arrakis, and you know Paul Atreides and all that kind of good stuff. And it just, I was just impressed. It was a fun movie, great songs. You know, it was true to the content material, but changed it a touch. And I thought it was great.
For somebody who holds nostalgia so close, and you being like a DVD collector and a protector of cinema,
and I love the original.
Yeah,
with Gene Wilder, that is one of my favorite kids' movies.
It always performs every time I watch it. Every time I learn something about Gene Wilder, I'm like,
Chocolate Room,
right? I
love about Gene Wilder's spin on this, and apparently it was his idea to do this when they meet Charlie or they meet Wonka for the first time in the original.
Love this story.
And he's kind of like limping with the cane, like he's an old man, and then he rolls up and then jumps up and like ta da, and you're just like, what?
He did that, and his defense for it was, I want to show the audience without telling the audience that you can't trust me.
Totally.
And that is R2. But that is exactly what that scene does. And then when you find that out, you go back and watch it, then you really pay attention to Wonka and how he's fucking with the kids.
But that's what happens in the book, right? The book is all, he's saying one thing but doing another
thing. Speaking of the side of his
mouth, referencing a different thing, you know what I mean?
So,
and it's almost like he's poking fun at those four kids and those parents because they're so, privileged and stuck up and just wretched humans. And he knows right from the get-go that Charlie's the one.
So here, I got a question for you.
And, you know, it's almost like he's talking to Grandpa Joe and Charlie in that way. Anyway.
And Grandpa Joe dance.
Yeah.
Always brings a smile to my face. When you find out that Wonka picks Charlie, and you can almost see a kindred spirit between the two of
them. Totally.
Is young Wonka someone who's like Charlie in some ways then? Is that why he picks Charlie?
Yes, right? Because young Wonka is poor, right?
Okay, that's what I'm saying.
And then he goes off on his own to explore the world. And then it's him working and traveling and then coming to the town where the greatest chocolate places in the world are to make his fortune. And that's where the story begins,
that's
right?
I've heard, yeah.
So there is that similarity in that respect, right?
I love that. So, I love when they do that. If you're going to make this character, then we've already got a
base. And the family was so important. So, and that's a little bit of a departure from the way, you know, but even so, like even in the book, like to Wonka, the family's not as important. So they kind of change the character a little bit in that respect, right? But I mean, you're gonna have some creative play.
People bought the book because they bought the book, but if you want to get the people who've never read the book or will ever
Roald Dahl's
see
the movie, family also signed off on that Wonka movie, right?
Nice.
So you know, it's not like it, you know, because it's still it's not public domain, right? So you still have to get their permission to do stuff within that, right?
Yeah. Well, speaking of public domain, it ain't no Mickey and Minnie Steamboat, right? Like you've really got to shine on the owners of the property.
Ain't no Mickey poking holes in Swiss cheese with his dick. You seen that original video?
No.
Oh fuck! It's hard to find online now.
I'm
Disney's
sure it
done
is.
A good job of fucking Mandela effecting that shit.
How's Mr. Grant?
Who?
The OG Oompa.
He was really fucking good. And that's also something that I like too, because in the Tim Burton remake, it was one Oompa Loompa, one actor playing all the Oompa Loompas.
Yes.
And whereas this, they show multiple ones. So Hugh Grant is just a Oompa Loompa, and something happens and that's why he's there, but I'll leave it at that. No spoilers.
Did you like that you were tricked into the musical thing? We were talking about this.
It wasn't that I was tricked. I just didn't even realize it.
Well,
but I was pleasantly surprised. And the funny thing is, about 8 months ago, I went and saw the Willy Wonka Broadway show here in Winnipeg.
Nice.
Right? Because
Why not? I saw the Clue performance at MTC.
Yeah,
like
it was fucking amazing.
You
right?
go see the different iteration.
Yeah,
of
and
the
Michelle
thing.
And I spent like a small fortune to get really good seats because we wanted to be up close and
you
center
wanna
for
be
that
in
type
it. Yeah,
of,
yeah.
And it was amazing, right? So, yeah. But I'm actually glad it was, because the original Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is kind of, it's essentially a musical.
It is. There's Are we?
This was more of a musical.
Yeah.
Though.
Are you a musical by all obvious traits and signs, or are you a movie that has singing in it? Right. Like, is Walk the Line a musical?
No.
But you have musical performances, just like you do in Elvis. Is Elvis a musical?
No.
Okay. Then why is Hamilton a musical but not Elvis? Besides the fact that they filmed a musical to make
part Hamilton. Of it is too is that you also have to imagine could this be on stage and win a Tony?
Okay,
I think that's kind of part of it in my mind at least, but who knows?
Well, like last episode we did.
Like I've never seen Jesus Christ Superstar on Broadway, but I mean the movie's pretty fucking epic. But I guess I don't know. You know what I mean?
Well, and that's the thing. It was a Broadway musical before it was a movie,
totally,
right? So
absolutely.
you adapt, and all of a sudden you have lighting instead of theater lighting and all that shit. But on the musical stuff we talked about, were like some of the things we picked.
Yeah,
South Park is a musical.
It's
because,
a fucking musical, dude.
Right? It's by all definitions, it's sung
fuck
instead
you,
of
fuck you, Uncle Fucker.
Garmin's mom's a big fat, or Kyle's mom's a big fat bitch. Big fat bitch. Big fat bitch. Like it. So,
I actually pissed my pants a little bit when the first time I saw that in the theater.
I think you all did.
Yeah.
That was
well, and I didn't even smoke weed.
Wow. So that's
all
true.
My friends smoked weed and I didn't.
That's true emotional.
Because I was
reaction.
Like kind of like at this stage where I was like, I was like, I'm done with weed. And they're all laughing. And I was laughing so hard, sober, I like a little bit of pee came out.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So
anyway,
Wonka. How many gobstoppers do you give it?
How many everlasting gobstoppers out of 10?
Yeah.
I would give it a solid 7.5.
Okay.
Yeah. I liked it.
Sweet.
It was fun. My kid really liked it. It was great production, good songs. Timothy Chalamet is solid in it. Hugh Grant's hilarious in it. And it was just, it had a good, fun feel all around.
That's what I hoped. I just want to come out of that being like, it's chocolate, it's sweets, it's candy, it's another world, it's silliness, it's goofiness. Okay.
And it was great. Silly. It totally.
All right. Because I mean,
that doesn't even make any sense. It doesn't have to make any sense because it's candy.
Yeah. It's candy and little people. Like we don't need a steering wheel and a compass to make this go somewhere.
What did you watch?
We watched a ton. I've got such a big list from over the holidays.
I watched a lot of stuff too, but that was the one standout for me in the last little bit. And I always try to pick something I saw in the theater first and foremost.
So
this is real
leave debaters. The real debaters. Yeah, it's got to be from a projector in some form. I did Poor Things last episode, so this one is Leave the World Behind and it ties into like
good
I
disaster.
Watched it before I thought of this, but
I watched that about 3 weeks ago.
You know what I loved about it? I loved that it is a disaster movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're late to the party, spoilers, everybody, it's about a cyber attack. Mm-hmm. But the themes that
if you haven't seen it yet, too bad.
Yeah, sorry. It's at this point, it's all online. So yeah, but like the themes that I liked outside of it being a cyber attack, which was cool because you got to watch a bunch of people be like, "What the fuck do we do?" Mm-hmm. Like it proves that if the lights do go out, we're all screwed, myself included. Like the more I learn about how hunting is probably the best way to supply 1 year of beef for yourself, the more I want to do it.
Yeah.
When you see shit like this, but what I really liked was the underarching themes of classism between a white family who rents a house from an unknown black family who shows up during the cyber attack, and then you meet the biggest Karen in Hollywood, which is Julia Roberts' character.
Well, and the white family is quote unquote middle class, and the black family is actually upper middle class.
Yeah, like they've
but not billionaire fucking rich. And then they display that distinction in the movie.
They do, and all of these things happening because it is what I think would happen. Classism would be an instant knee-jerk reaction if there was a true global cyber attack, because it would
and
be
who
like,
was the most prepared,
right? And mm-hmm. and it's usually the ones that are left by the roadside when it comes to like their tinfoil hat people, right? The like the real true bunkers and preppers are going to make all of us look bad when a meteor won't hit us. No, it's probably not going to be nuclear war, but it's going to be something cyber. It's going to be something that disables us.
And you want to be in a rural area or in the Hamptons.
Like, we're going to the farm. We got a spot. We're good. But I need to be taken care of. I'm not going to be somebody who's like, follow me, guys, into the wild blue yonder. I'll be fucked.
Yeah, I felt how soft your hands are.
I'll type our way out of it, right? I'll send an email to somebody important.
That EMP blast is going to extinguish all that shit.
My tools are gone.
You fucked.
My toolbox is rendered useless. But Marshala Ali is fantastic.
He's great.
In it.
He's
good. I wish I could remember the daughter's name. What's behind her? Point is everybody in the cast pulls their weight.
Yeah.
Even the kids do. Like, it...
I don't know. I found...
You found them to be slightly annoying?
I found them both annoying. And when the kids' teeth fall out, I had to walk out of the room.
Yeah, that was...
I just... Yeah, well, but I liked how they connected that to that that strange attack at the Cuban embassy, both Canadian U.S. embassies.
Yeah. Like all of the things, like they.
And then I went down the fucking rabbit hole looking into that, and I was like, damn, that shit is real.
Like auditory something syndrome or whatever, but then the water causing his teeth to fall out. Like you've got remnants of all of these different types of attacks, like all of these different things that happen all simultaneously. It's like the
electromagnetic pulse.
Electromagnetic pulse. All that shit was really cool. But
they didn't do any EMPN, though.
No, they didn't. No. They just, everybody's device
went
dark.
They just disabled the communication systems.
And I mean, I love a movie or a play or a show that takes place in one room, right? Because it just builds the tension, right? And building the tension is hard to do in any situation, but you're building the tension between a bunch of characters who are all talking mouths and at the same time, disaster that is building with it, right? And they're building they're not building exponentially. One's building more and then the other one's catching up. And
what did you think of the badass bunker? If that told me anything, was that fuck, it is worth it to have a fucking badass movie collection.
I want to say that I give Leave the World Behind. Oh, the badass ending, I think was, you know what I loved about the ending? I'm going to spoil it here so you can skip this part, listener. But what I loved about the ending was that the one kid just wanted friends, right? That was what...
She wanted to watch the last episode because she needs to know what happens with
Ross
and
Rachel. The idea that in her world, the biggest thing was friends.
Totally.
Which was showing the giant separation between what the parents are going through, what the kids are going through. Like what everybody. But then her getting friends was like a little bit of a nod to being like, she's going to go out now, like the world's going to suck, it's all going to be over, but at least she got some closure on something.
Totally, that's true, actually.
And the metaphor of needing closure, and then everything else doesn't matter. It's just about being, and I thought that was neat to use the Friends episode as that plot device. That was
It
ends the movie in a weird way, but it also ends the movie in a proper way. I give Leave the World Behind 8 out of 10 dead, useless bricks of
that phones. High, eh?
I really liked it.
Wow.
And Loudermilk is what we both said we watched.
I mean, I'm a few episodes in. Ron Livingston, he's crass, he's funny. I just, you know.
If you don't know what Loudermilk is, it's a combination of, I would say the two shows, if you could relate it to, there's some Californication and Hank Moody in there.
A little bit, yeah.
Right, and then there's also some Larry David in there from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
So
and High Fidelity.
And High Fidelity, too. Definitely High Fidelity. So if you want an angry music critic...
John Cusack's character from High Fidelity.
I thought you meant Jack Black. No, I'm just kidding.
Obviously.
But, like, it's a Cosby sweater. Watch, I will now go sell 3 copies of the Beta Band.
Wow, it's weird how you talked about ketamine and now Cosby. Yeah. I feel like you're going down a fucking...
Yeah, I'm just leaving breadcrumbs throughout the episode. Yeah, or a conspiracy episode on every other weekend.
Next will be a Quagmire Roofie Colada
Epstein,
reference.
Epstein.
Jesus. Disaster movie right there.
No kidding. I tripped. I knew Loudermilk existed.
I didn't.
I didn't even know about it. And I was like, you know what? Ron Livingston getting his own show... That we were due. We've had Office Space. He's played subpar characters. He's played.
I've seen that video online though, where he's like making fun of that girl's like inflection while she's like,
yes.
And I thought that, and then I saw that opening scene to Loudermilk, and that's what I thought of. But I know that that's an unrelated thing to Loudermilk. But that is the funniest fucking scene. And then the girl like starts talking normal after a while, and he's like, see.
He just. It's the character. It's a power character.
Yeah.
Haji Ella, a guy I interviewed on writing, he wrote on the Eric Andre show, told us that like those are the power characters that he likes to write. The guys that are just like overly confident, but also say the things that you can't say.
And are also just a fucking train wreck and so self-conscious.
Yes, right.
And because have so much self-doubt.
And self-importance, but right.
Like when he goes and steals her fucking records and the record player.
Because it's just bad music. He's like, you're not allowed to have these.
He's like, well, I said you had that one record. And she goes, that's my boyfriend.
Right? And she puts, okay, there's a scene that you're going to come
even
on.
Even though earlier he goes, he's a doctor. He doesn't know anything about good music. But that's.
So later on, he has to crash at that girl's apartment up the 2C.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
And he crashes and she puts on a record. He's like, oh, some Andy Schoaf. Nice. And she's like, that's Carl's album. Like the joke just keeps going.
I know, it's great. It's great.
But like it's the AA meeting aspect of it because he's such a fuck up. He's trying to help other fuck ups.
The funny thing is they're actually not. You're not. AA actually says that shouldn't be discussed in media at all. But I like that it's actually in there because I think it's good to kind of shed some light.
It's cathartic,
and it's good because it kind of it normalizes it and doesn't and kind of doesn't put it in a light that you should be ashamed to go to a meeting, which I think is important.
Exactly, and even the comedic characters like the big black guy who's like.
Oh, Cutter? Fuck, that guy's a fucking crazy guy.
Cutter is comedic gold, though, right? Yeah. Him with the fake alcoholic.
Or the guy that was in the band, the guy that has the
The shorter hands, yeah.
I'm assuming it's Flitamide.
Yes. Yeah. He's also from American Horror Story.
Oh, was he?
He was American Horror Story Freak Show.
Okay.
Which was the circus freak show where he was, and he also.
I never saw that season.
And you need it. Because it's half hour.
And it's crass as fuck.
It's crass as fuck. If you want to get some shit out, it just like a new season. It's been on Netflix for a while, but the new season just dropped on it, I guess. Like,
oh, whatever. Okay. Well, it's never popped. It just popped up in my algorithm. So
Either they bought all three or.
I don't think. Anyway. But I mean, the show was only 17, 18, 19, 20. Like it ended like 4 years ago. So
I just. Will Sasso too. Oh, as fuck, the fledging.
The hidden alcoholic. Who's his fucking sponsor? It's so good.
The episode when
he finds the vodka in the back of the toilet and he dumps it out, he goes, "Oh, that's an expensive taste."
But then when he gets busted, but they think it's the girl's alcohol.
Yeah.
Then he's like, "You know what we should do? We shouldn't tell her. We should just ignore the whole thing." And when Shauna, like as you were saying, Michelle and you watch it, Shauna is like, "You want to watch some Loudermilk?" I'm like, "Yes, I fucking do."
Yeah.
And it makes you, it's like, as long as you're hearing Loudermilk insult the world, you feel that the world, I feel, is maybe has some sense.
We took a pause on that, and last night we crushed four episodes of Fool Me Once, which is a new limited series, UK series, which is actually.
Is it good?
I like, it's got lots of cool kind of twists, and it's like, you know, rich British family and that kind of stuff.
The upstairs people.
Yeah. The Downton Abbey people.
Yeah.
And the matriarchal from the rich family is what's her face from Ab Fab? Absolutely Fabulous. You ever seen that British show? It's fucking hilarious.
I know how much good shit comes out of like Britain and the BBC, but it doesn't really register with Shauna. She just, the accent thing is a bother for her.
Michelle doesn't like the British accents either. Sometimes she's like, "I don't know what they're saying."
Shauna and her.
And sometimes I have to pause it and I have to tell her what they just said. I'm like.
Don't you put the subtitles on though?
No.
You don't watch the subtitles?
Fuck no. I'm not fucking working while I'm watching a movie.
There's no work. You just.
Yeah.
There's confirmation of language.
It ruins it.
How does it ruin?
Use your fucking ears and pay attention and put your phone in the other room.
Yeah, but not all of
us. Put your phone in the other room.
No, the phone aside.
Put your phone in the other room.
Not all of us know audio the way you know audio. So like.
You just listen.
I know you just listen, but sometimes there's a bumbly fucking accent.
Then you fucking rewind it real quick.
I don't want to do that. I want to be able to process in real time.
That's fair. That's fair. You're a fucking. Weird Gen Z-er.
I'm just a guy who has a hard time understanding.
That's fair.
I'm just a dude reading another dude's language on TV. This is my Robert Downey for the week.
I love the Tropic Thunder fucking tie-in. It's so good. So good. I need to fucking watch that movie again.
I give Loudermilk like 7 to 8 used records out of 10.
I would give it 8. I like it a lot.
It's just
it's wickedly crass. I love that shit.
Well, and I mean when
I consider myself a fairly sarcastic person, and that's why I appreciate it.
For lunch.
I like the high up pants and he's about to say something, she leaves and the lady's and his wife's like, "Please help me." "Do you want me to go say something to him?" And she's like, "No." And then she goes,
"Yeah."
Should we do this?
Let's do it.
All right.
Let's open the floor, shall we?
So, floor's open.
As mentioned at the top of the show, we're talking about disasters. We've talked about disasters of characters. We've talked about disasters of personality so far. But these are the movies that we love, that you love, that have ranked on a ton of different lists. about what happens when a giant disaster comes. Could be climate related, could be industrial, commercial, accidental, disasters in space, disasters on planet Earth, disasters in universes that we've never even visited, fake, real disasters, disasters that, you know, are of the heart, are of the mind. Like you can have this conversation for days, but
I think people truly love a movie where there's an ultimate disaster or a bad thing happens like this, and then how humans react and persevere.
The human
against
spirit.
It.
Yeah, no, you're right. Like, okay, great example. What
or come
it?
Together to save, you know, fuck all those other people. They're dead for sure, but we're gonna save this one last person.
The Impossible that was made. 33, the miners that were trapped underground, right?
Yeah.
Those are the ones that
I don't like those. I like those ones, and I don't.
Is it because they always change some shit?
No. No, I'm okay with them taking, some creative liberties
and, yep.
just to make the story more palatable and grip you a little bit more. But I do like the scenario, like, let's take, like, the movie, like, Daylight with Stallone, where, like, they all get trapped in that underground tunnel. Like,
you're right. Like, and it's also fun to watch the potential
totally.
Of a building fall or the potential of a dam bursting, right?
But you also think about how you would react in that situation.
Yeah.
No. Real or fictional, right? So what list are we going through? This is an article on
this
where?
Is Collider's 18 best disaster movies all time ranked according to Letterboxd. There's going to be shit we obviously haven't seen on this list, so we will condense it for you.
I bet you we've seen every movie on this list.
I'm betting so too. So number 18, Independence Day by Roland Emmerich.
Alien invasion.
Giant. Disaster. The disaster for humankind.
I liked this movie a lot when I saw
it.
This came out when I was in high school.
When he punches the alien after he opens the fucking
You know,
shit.
This was the movie that really put Will Smith, made it, after he did this, then he was like A-list.
Yeah, he...
Because this was his first big movie.
After he did this, was his Scientology too?
Well, no, this was the big first big movie he did after leaving Fresh Prince.
Grade A blockbuster. Mm-hmm. Right, like you couldn't.
It checks off every fucking box.
It does,
and it still, honestly, it still holds up today.
It does.
Got crazy Randy Quaid in it. Got Bill Pullman playing the president again.
Vivica A. Fox, gorgeous.
You know,
what's his face?
I also like that they used.
We're forgetting the.
There was an actual lot of CGI in it. They actually used
that was practical.
Like when they blow up the fucking White House, like that's a fucking miniature.
It's a miniature, yeah. The scientist.
Jeff Goldblum.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm having a brain fart. Right?
Yes.
He's the guy riding.
Except for, like,
Judd Hirsch is his dad.
Can we be honest though? When he's like, I wrote a computer program and put a virus into the mothership. I was kind of like, okay, get fucked.
when he's like, shoot that Pepsi can there, Corporal. And then it bounces off. You're insane. And then he's like, shoot it again.
Like the fact that like C++ and Java, I believe, don't really mesh together. So you know,
when
like
he hits enter and he's like, I gave it a cold.
I like that movie.
Great. Exploration of Area 51. I think one of the very first movies
that really kind of
in the blockbuster realm.
Yeah.
That was like, no, Area 51 can be part of this plot. Getting like strangled with the alien tentacle around his head, right?
Yeah.
And then the alien talking through him. It
that was props. I think that was the biggest movie of 96.
July release too. Independence Day came out on the 4th.
June release, just before.
June release, okay.
Yeah,
I'm looking. Had to build up steam.
June 25th, 1996. It says right here.
2 weeks before Independence Day. Okay,
yeah. And it was long too. 2 hours and 25 minutes.
Doesn't.
And I think
feel
this
like
is the first Roland Emmerich big blockbuster
where
that kind of started.
Yeah.
This.
He cut his teeth on this. Yeah, for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah. No. Now, okay. Quick question. Mm-hmm. Alien invasion. Could you survive? Would you be one of those people on the roof, like her friend, who's like, "Take me home" with her sign, or would you be able to, you know, face the aliens and hop in a plane if you had the skills or something?
I feel like the alien invasion that we're gonna see is gonna be more like War of the Worlds, where it's gonna be not these giant motherships, but just like shit everywhere
coming out of the ocean.
Yeah, I mean. I live right smack dab in the middle, and so do you. We're both fucking dead in any disaster.
There's probably one under us right now.
We're not fucking living, dude.
No, I think we're done.
When the Anunnaki come here in the next couple of years, we fucked.
The Greys? Is that the Anunnaki?
No, the Anunnaki are the big tall ones that the Babylonians talked about.
Yes. I don't know.
True.
All right. What's next?
Deep Impact.
That's the name of my porn.
So question, what do you prefer? Do you prefer Deep Impact or Armageddon? Because I'm assuming Armageddon's going to be on this list, but further up.
Because
they both came out the same fucking year.
They were that's the Paul Blart Mall Cop and To Serve and Protect kind of thing, right?
Yeah, like, but this predates that by over a decade.
Okay.
Deep Impact's the one with fucking Frodo and fucking Morgan Freeman, right?
Here's the story.
And Deep Impact's also the one with David Duchovny's wife.
Tia Leone. Yeah, and... So, okay, Deep Impact
is more realistic
because it's about the global impact when the meteor does.
It's the one where Morgan Freeman finally does because obviously Elijah Wood's character is the amateur astronomer that first detects it, but really they've known about it for years, and then Morgan Freeman says, this is, you know, there's this thing coming and blah, blah, blah. And that's why, you know, we've recalled all of the U.S. forces over the last 2 years. We're building a giant underground fucking facility in the fucking Ozarks, which the United States actually fucking has. I can show you a fucking video.
Programming listener, who knows?
But then he goes, but we've been also working on this mission. We're going to send these ships and we're going to fucking blow this fucking asteroid and the human race will prevail. And you're just like, whoa.
Yeah, because theirs was about misdirection and Armageddon was about total destruction.
Correct.
And misdirection seems more plausible than total destruction.
It is 100%. Because here's the reality is if you know about it, you don't want to tell regular folks about it too soon because civilization will fucking disintegrate
Financial, societal, you can
keep your shit. You can mount a cooperative
effort.
Means of dealing with it. 2012 is the same way. They know that the fucking end's coming and they build those giant fucking boats like years in advance, right? And they don't let regular people know because everything will fucking disintegrate and no one will live, right?
It's sacrificing the truth for a moment to save the betterment of the human species, which is a running theme in all disaster movies.
It just sucks if you're you only get survived if you're the fucking queen.
Yeah. That was really interesting in 2012 was where they did show the discrepancy between the mechanic and the Saudi Arabian prince, right? Like, and then having that argument of do you save everybody? Or do you save...
And do you save rich people that have no fucking... All they're good at being is rich a lot of times?
Yeah.
Like they don't have to fix things. They don't know how to fucking grow food and stuff, you know?
So you have all the money, but you can't fix the ship. You have all the money, but you can't...
In Deep Impact, they talk about that. So they talk about how they've selected specific people that are top-notch in their area. So they're... You know, you're a top notch mechanical engineer.
We're
gonna bring you. So there's certain people that get selectively saved, and then they do, and then they also did a lottery to allow some other people in, and then everyone else, you're on your own. Best of luck.
That's building a microcosm. That's having your new community.
But that fucking makes sense. That's what you need to do because at some point you have to say to yourself, the Earth potentially is fucked. The human race is potentially fucked. What is our best chance of moving on to the next thing and rebuilding civilization as quickly as possible? If it's a bunch of fucking, like, you know, hunter-gatherer people in the middle of the jungle that are the only ones that survive, how much longer is it going to take for civilization to rebuild?
Yeah.
Whereas if we take some of the brightest and smartest, but also people with these practical skills that can help rebuild society, then civilization can rehappen more quickly.
100%. Although you did
now,
ask
if we'd
me.
Been if we'd planned ahead like that in the Younger Dryas, then it wouldn't have taken 5,000 years after the Younger Dryas comet strike to come back to, you know, Mesopotamia and the Babylonians.
You asked me which one I like better, and I think the one I like better only is because when Ben Affleck said, "Why don't you just teach astronauts to drill instead of flying drillers to fly in space?" Michael Bay said, "Shut the fuck up."
Bruce Willis is pretty good in that movie too. Deep Impact was cool though because I like how, like, you know, the asteroid splits into two.
Yes.
And one part goes past the Earth, but one part crashes into the Atlantic Ocean. And then the
rise of the water up the mountain.
And then he says, you know, Europe was destroyed and blah, 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 but we will rebuild and all that kind of stuff. And there's kind of some truth to that.
There is some cataclysm in that where Armageddon completely...
And aren't they talking outside of the White House? And the White House is all kind of fucked up?
Yeah.
Kind of reminded me of Mars Attacks, though.
It's also a disaster movie. The idea of Armageddon is just a funner version of the end of the world, right? You've got the assemble the team moment.
The proper term is more fun. Funner is not a word. Thank you very much.
It's more fun to go out in Armageddon than I think it is.
We need to keep this highbrow. Thank you very much.
My bad. I didn't know we were.
We speak the Queen's English on this fucking podcast.
This is very true. One push-up for the Queen in honor of.
We speak the King's English now. Sorry, I gotta change things.
Armageddon is a better movie.
It's more fun. It's more popcorn fun.
It is more popcorn fun.
This movie is more scientifically realistic.
Yeah, exactly. Meteor. If a meteor hit and I wasn't in the immediate blast zone, I'd still try to.
Which movie has the better president? Obviously, Deep Impact, because it's Morgan Freeman. I don't even know who plays the president in the Armageddon one.
Do they even show him? Because Billy Bob Thornton's their like middleman.
Let's check.
Yeah. Could you survive a meteor impact?
It depends on where it crashes.
Yeah. Okay. I think we're both sold on that. Okay. Now, we're also going to run into another this or that. Number 16 is Volcano or Rob, Dante's Peak. Do you like your Tommy Lee Jones and your Anne Heche?
Dante's Peak's better.
The ash covering in Dante's Peak is way better than the blowout
scene. Pierce Brosnan's just a better leading man.
He is. It's practically the same movie, though. They're trying to find out why a super volcano is reacting, if it's going to react again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's Mount St.
I mean,
Helens.
There's a lot more fucking lava in Volcano, which is cool.
Yeah.
And you also get to see the destruction of LA, which is cool.
Yeah, and that's more in line with End of the World times than Dante's Peak. Dante's Peak feels like an isolated incident. We're
out in the fucking boons.
Yeah, right? Where Volcano's like, you know, this is happening all over, right? There's
the one thing about Dante's Peak that always is like, is etched into my mind forever. Is when they've got that vehicle and they've got to go through that deep water and they're like, how are you going to get through the water? He's like, it's okay. My vehicle has a snorkel. And that's the first time I'd ever seen that.
The thing that pops out the
and
side. Yeah.
It just like burned into my mind forever. So whenever somebody says Dante's Peak, I think about Pierce Brosnan pointing that out. I don't know why, I just do.
It's that exhaust pipe snorkel that pops out the side.
Yeah.
I think the special effects in Dante's Peak are better than the special effects in Volcano. I feel the special effects in Volcano were purchased and then just slid in, where the ones in Dante's Peak have the same texture.
Peak, Dante's Peak is more more practical, right?
Yeah.
And it's less CGI driven and more character and emotion driven.
And it's more in line with Mount St. Helens than Volcano is.
Correct.
Right.
But again, Dante's Peak takes place, I think, in Oregon or Northern California, which is closer to Washington, where Mount St. Helens
occurred. And so you know that one is based.
But they're both on the San Andreas Fault. You know what the next movie is?
Well, is it San Andreas?
San Andreas.
Did you like it?
I didn't finish it. I started it, and it was so fucking derivative and just. I feel like it had already all been done, and I just didn't.
That's Alexandra Daddario, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and Carla Gugino, right? Were there
I think Paul Giamatti's in it.
Yeah, he's. Well, no.
Isn't he?
I don't think he is. I think Alexandra Daddario.
Oh, he is.
He is?
Yes, yeah.
Is he the scientist?
I don't remember what his role is. I don't know. I started watching it, and I was like, this isn't worth 2 hours and 20 minutes of my time.
And I mean, it is based on the idea of the earthquake scenario, which I feel an earthquake is probably the easiest one to survive.
Yeah, but I felt like it was a shitty version of 2012. Like 2012 already, I almost feel like I bet you they took some of the fucking CGI from 2012
hey,
and they just rehashed it.
Can we borrow some of that shit? How much?
You know?
Well, and I mean, that's what.
And 2012 is more fun.
Well, 2012 has.
They're jumping all over the world. It's got that giant Antonov fucking cargo plane from the Russians.
They're flying Porsches at the back.
You know what I mean? They're building those giant fucking boats in China.
It has the earth crust cracking. It has the
super volcano. It's got Woody Harrelson as like the fucking crazy guy with his own fucking radio show.
It's got.
And yes, we would die in 2012 because the super volcano would fuck us here in Winnipeg.
2012 is like a three-peat, right? You've got you've got water, you've got crust, and you've got magma, right?
Like and you got like fucking awesome scenes where they're trying to fly a Cessna as the fucking runway's fucking disintegrating, and LA just gets fucking obliterated. Oh,
where
it's so good.
San Andreas is colonial to only California, right?
Yeah, you're just seeing LA and San Francisco fuck.
You're seeing the climate prediction of California break off into the ocean. Earthquake, I think we both could do well in.
Whoa. Earthquake?
Yeah, based on the San Andreas.
I mean, it just depends on where you're at. Like if you're in a tall.
But like right now, if an earthquake hit, we'd all go
we'd
to our
fine.
Doorways,
we'd
right?
Be fine. We'd be fine.
And like this is a super version of it. Melancholia Next. I've never seen it.
I've never seen it. What's it about?
Okay, so this is what's interesting about it. Controversial director Lars von Trier, whatever, blah, blah, blah. As they, Kirsten Dunst and Charlotte Gainsborough, as they discover another planet named Melancholia is about to collide with Earth. Taking place on Justine's wedding day, the film explores Justine's relationship with her friends and family as the threat looms above them. So it's basically watching, like,
moon. I've never seen this.
I did not know that this was a disaster movie until I pulled this list. Like, this is...
Actually, I feel like I have seen this movie.
Kirsten Dunst isn't one of my favorite actresses.
Oh, I was saying, this is not the one where there's, like, the other world above, and it's, like, the reverse, and the guy has to have, like, the weight so he can come down.
That's the... Yeah, I know the one you're
that's
talking
a different
about.
Movie,
that's Daisy Ridley and Tom... what's his face? Spider-Man. Tom...
No, it's not.
No? Who's in that?
No, it's... What's his face from the Beatles movie? Fuck, I can't remember his name.
That's okay. Point is, I've never seen Melancholia, but like
it's intrigued me enough to maybe go check it out. I also like Alexander Skarsgård.
Lars von Trier, you mean? Oh no, he's in it. Alexander Skarsgård. Interesting. Yeah, I really like Alexander Skarsgård.
Here it is, number 13 is 2012, baby.
There we go. So
I think we already talked about this movie.
We have.
It's fun. It's just a fun fucking popcorn movie. Period. End of story.
I think it's my favorite one. I've watched it the most. I think
I've seen it several times. John Cusack is fucking great in it.
Right. There's the humor that brings you back to Independence Day with a Roland Emmerich film. Yeah. It was marketed well. It was made for 2012. Yeah. There a lot of that was the Mayan calendar stuff. Like,
yeah.
I like when a movie does take a little bit of theory.
Well, it's Amanda Peet that's in that one. That's
She's
right.
She's the ex-wife. Who hooks up with the plastic surgeon who does the breasts.
Oliver Platt's in it too.
He's the angry guy who's like, "How are you gonna? You're gonna kill everybody in the name of?"
Yeah.
It does a lot of theme work. It's well done. I mean, watching those arcs have to work their way out of the mountains as soon as the giant water comes up from the tsunami.
CGI is pretty solid.
It is. Yeah. And
it's funny how some of the CGI in the 2000s seems better than some of the CGI now.
Which is like,
especially after seeing the latest Ant-Man movie.
How do you go backward? Well, that is rushed CGI. Mm-hmm. That is not good CGI. Mm-hmm. If they 6 more months, they probably would have had that shit.
Well, the difference is back in the 2000s, Industrial Light and Magic literally still did everything.
Yeah.
And now it's like
that company.
Now it's like, so and so with like a supercomputer from 2004 did this.
The quality has dropped because the quantity has increased. Essentially,
correct. We make, the reality is there's too many movies being made.
Number 12.
There needs to be a fucking quota.
Have you seen Deepwater Horizon?
I have not.
Do you like Peter Berg's movies?
I like Peter Berg's movies, and I do like Mr. Wahlberg.
So this
it's one of those movies that I just never got a chance to watch, and I just. Haven't watched it
the
since.
Politics of safety. Did they do a drill test? Did they not do a drill test? The people on the rig were like, we should have done one. The owners of the company, which is, I think, BP Oil, were like, we don't need to. They skipped the test. The blowout plug didn't hold.
Boom.
Caused the whole. So it's just the cause of a safety accident, but it is a giant fucking disaster.
And then it's about them just saving each,
trying to get off. Yeah, exactly. But the whole thing starts with like the mechanics accusing the suits. And then that moral dilemma going into,
does John Malkovich play the bad guy from BP?
John Malkovich is one of the bad guys from BP with a southern Louisiana
accent. Oh, yeah.
Right? He's like, we don't need to do the test. We are good. Fly by night. Right? Like, he's just like, he's just a slick suit wearing motherfucker.
Nice.
Mark Wahlberg
plays. Lots of fire.
Tons of fire. Tons of blowouts. It's an oil rig, right?
Yeah, man.
It's
Peter Berg. Peter Berg makes those kind of movies good. Next is Contagion.
Okay.
I liked this movie. I really did at the time. I mean, you know, Jude Law's great in it. You've got
Gwyneth Paltrow's in it.
Matt Damon, Gwyneth Paltrow.
Goopy Goop.
You know, you've got Lawrence Fishburne, the guy from the CDC. That's how a guy from the CDC should actually operate, not fucking Fauci shit. You know, like, anyway, let's not go down the rabbit hole. Let's put a pin in this one and move on.
Although what I love is the cultural rebound from COVID happened, then this movie all of a sudden just went through the roof. And that was what was really interesting about it was that why would you want to watch this now? Mm-hmm. Now that this is happening, because this is a movie, it's based on the science of pandemics and how you can jump the food chain and jump the species and all that stuff.
But the big difference was is like when COVID was going down, the whole time I was thinking to myself was, what's happening right now with COVID is not Contagion.
No, it's not.
In my mind, people were acting like it was fucking Contagion. And I was like, listen, like, you know what? Like in the movie Contagion, basically, if you got this, you were gonna die.
That was the 25%.
The survival rate on this was like 5% or less in the contagion movie. I think it was 1%.
Can we pause for a second? Yeah. I need to use the washroom. Okay, so thank you, listener, for waiting. I am back.
Next after Contagion is The Towering Inferno. Now that's kind of going back, to that's 1974, and that's got what's his face in it, Paul Newman. And have you seen it?
I haven't seen it since my mom and me watched
it when I was a kid. It's good for the time. It's kind of like watching the Poseidon Adventure. It's just, you know, where a big tsunami topples over,
Yeah, it's another one of those accident movies where they're all having dinner in a giant tower and the thing catches on fire.
Steve McQueen's in it. Paul Newman's in it. I think Faye Dunaway's in it. I think Fred Astaire is even in it.
Really? Is he dancing or is he singing?
No, but I mean, the 70s was where the disaster movie kind of really cut its teeth, right? You know, Jaws and all that kind of good stuff.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, I think we underrate how good cinema was in the 70s.
Well, and you're relying on all practical at the time. You're relying on all camera tricks.
It's also a long ass movie. If you look at the runtime, it's 165 minutes.
Jesus Christ, that's really.
It's almost 3 fucking hours.
Well, and Jaws is what, 2.5? So yeah. You're totally right about that. Well, yeah. Number 9 is The Birds,
It's fucking great.
It is.
It's so fucking good.
It's nature turning itself. It's
final scene
men.
Where they're going over the Golden Gate Bridge and there's all those fucking birds everywhere, and you're just what the fuck?
And it's different kinds of birds at that point, yeah. Right? The birds have now talked to other birds.
Yeah.
Hitchcock's
great, man.
Between the two, I would rather run down a set of stairs and get out of a towering inferno than being attacked by a bunch of birds and being pecked to death. I think that's
yeah,
kind
true.
Of between the two, I think I would do well.
Number 8 is Airplane, 1980.
It's
a disaster movie. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Is it? Don't Call Me Shirley. It's funny. I mean, the Zucker brothers are brilliant. Can I tell you my favorite Zucker brothers story?
Sure.
So the Zucker brothers, after they got famous on Airplane, they went and bought a horse and they wanted to do a prank and they called the horse's name. It's all pink on the inside. That was the name of the horse, right? Okay. Random name for a horse. Anyways, they told the guy to run a certain way.
Yeah.
And they wanted the announcer to have to say a certain thing. So they ran all these races. They paid this guy to race poorly. So eventually during one race, the announcer said, it's all pink on the inside. It's all pink on the inside coming around. It's all pink on the inside. And then they retired the horse and moved on. That's what they did with their fucking airplane money.
I mean, Leslie Nielsen is... Yeah,
I don't think anybody's surviving an airplane crash. I mean, I believe the
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is pretty funny in that movie.
They're all amazing.
He plays the co-pilot.
Yeah.
Did he have the fish?
It never died. Sean's dad just laughs out loud during these movies. He thinks they're the funniest things on the planet, which makes me laugh. But I mean, if an airplane,
it's like Naked Gun. It's spoofing a disaster. Yeah, it's that slapstick.
Can you imagine watching Airplane in an airplane that's about to crash? Can you imagine that being the last thing you get to see?
No, that sounds terrible. Oh, you know who's in Dante's Peak? It's Linda Hamilton.
That's it. Yeah. The other Linda Hamilton movie.
So number 7 is Dante's Peak. Yeah.
Which is what we mentioned earlier. That is exactly what is better than Volcano.
Yeah.
Going down the list of
Poseidon Adventure.
Ship turning upside down.
There we go. I love Ernest Borgnine in this movie.
Did you see the remake with Kurt Russell and
I didn't. Because sometimes I feel like shit should just not be touched.
This one.
And this is back when Gene Hackman was the fucking man.
Yeah, French Connection, Gene Hackman.
This came out I think the same fucking year as French Connection.
Wow.
So think about that.
That's a busy man.
You know, or within a year of that, for sure.
Gene Hackman, Ernest Borgnine, Red Buttons, Carol Lindley.
Roddy McDowell's in it.
117-minute runtime, too. Yeah. Again, a 70s action movie with a lot to tell. Because you got to build the characters. Then when you start killing them off, right? It's an ensemble disaster movie. Yeah. I don't do well in small spaces. I'd be crawling my ass out. I'd be doing everything that it takes, right? Because an upside-down ship... Titanic that we know, eventually has air pockets. You still have some survival going on.
Yeah, totally. Number five is another Emmerich movie, The Day After Tomorrow. Now, do you like 2012 better than this movie?
Yes.
I kind of think I do too, but I do really like this movie. I mean, I like, I'm a big Jake Gyllenhaal, Gyllenhaal fan.
Watching a ship go down Wall Street as they're sitting in that library, like, it is the epitome of cataclysmic climate disaster, right? But things were like intense freezing, intense heat, water levels rising, tsunamis, right? Like all of the different things from the climatologist's perspective, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like a, what was the one that Al Gore did, right? The documentary about...
Inconvenient Truth.
Inconvenient Truth. This is almost the feature of Inconvenient Truth where we're like...
Well, it isn't, though. I mean, this is the opposite of climate change. So they were talking about here how, you know, the perspective of how an ice age begins, right? And how it can rapidly occur and how they found, you know, archaeological or remains of woolly mammoths that were basically like, you know, frozen.
Flash frozen.
So that was
like your Michelina's
on...
dinner.
Exactly.
But like it's the snowball effect, so to speak, of the flash freezing.
Yeah, totally.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Do you like Gyllenhaal? Who else is in that? That's
what's his face is in it? Dennis Quaid.
Emmy Rossum from that Shameless American remake. I loved her in that. And again, $120 Long movie, like action movie, disaster movies seem like they follow the strategic.
Well, Buck 20 is actually short.
That's 2 hours. 16.
Yeah, but you know, 2012 is like 2.5 hours.
That's true. They follow the strategic three arc act of like, here's your characters, here's the disaster, and here's the redeeming qualities of said characters.
It's funny, as we're going deeper into this list, we've already talked about some of these movies. Like, here's The Impossible at number 4.
Have you seen? It's so good.
It's really good. It's really good.
So good. And that's the human spirit we were talking about earlier.
Well,
right?
I think the thing is, you know, until I actually saw this movie, you know,
I didn't get a good perspective
on how big of a deal this earthquake
was.
That's
a really good point.
And the fact that it also happened on Boxing Day, like the day after Christmas.
Yeah.
So people are just like, you know, having a hangover from Christmas and it's just
playing,
you know,
in a pool.
And it makes me think like, you know, if somebody ever attacks, they're attacking on Christmas Day.
It is because your pants are down the most.
Absolutely.
Well, and like, okay.
And Ewan McGregor and Naomi Watts are great. And Tom Holland's the kid in it.
He is.
That's right.
And he does such a good job at like the panic and the fear. And when him and mom are swimming and then she gets stabbed with that tree trunk.
Oh, yeah.
And then when they're in the hospital and the doctor's doing the surgery. Like, it is a grotesque.
And he gets lost. And he doesn't know where mom is.
And they pull that thing out of her mouth. Remember? She swallowed something.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
And it was some sort
of... It was in her lungs.
Yeah. Like, she swallowed so much of that. But like...
And how she's actually a doctor and she's just like, you know...
Everything in all of these movies, be it the classics, the 70s, the Hitchcocks, this new age CGI, the lack of CGI, this one really gave you a good idea of what that tsunami did, right? Like it had that wave coming from the ocean. It gave you that shot. Mm-hmm. It made you feel like you were sitting on that Thai beach and it happening to you.
Totally.
And then having to survive your way out of it.
Yeah, it was very realistic in that perspective. And I think the thing about that too is that more than a lot of these movies, you could actually see yourself in that situation because, you know, I think a lot of us have been to a resort in Mexico
or
the Caribbean or in Thailand or wherever, and we're kind of like, I've been in that fucking resort, you know? Like,
I've looked at that ocean.
What the fuck would I do? And the funny thing is, it's one thing to be in a disaster that happens when you're at home, but imagine you're
home
on
base.
Vacation
and
you don't have some of those things. Whereas I feel like
you don't speak the language.
If the disaster happened in my house, I could grab a few things and throw it in my bug out bag, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
But like when I go on vacation, I don't have a pocket knife or a multi tool or a
flip flops and
flashlight,
board shorts,
exactly, right?
Right, and like a passport. Like you're not
exactly.
You're not prepared.
Totally.
Number three.
Jurassic Park.
The most realistic disaster of all of them.
I guess so. I mean, I guess it's a disaster movie.
I mean, loosely.
It's a great fucking movie, though.
It's the disaster of man's hubris, right? Man thinking he could bring back a species into a time that doesn't...
And control it.
Right? Like, and you have those conversations from the chaos.
Newman's so good in it, too.
Right?
Samuel Jackson's fucking smoking in the fucking... with the cigarette hanging out of his mouth. Like, fuck.
Ian Malcolm with no shirt on leaning to the side, right? Like... But
or
like,
when the accountant gets eaten.
Just sitting there on the shitter. Like, and, like, the best part is he could have been eaten in so many ways, but they're like, no, what's the most... What's the position that you can't do anything in?
The velociraptors are so scary.
The Dilophosaurus spitting on Nedry when he goes down the hill.
Oh, fuck. Sam Neill's so good in that, too.
The CGI. Like, that
do you like Sam Neill better in Event Horizon or in Jurassic Park?
Event Horizon.
Yes.
Jurassic Park.
That should be on here. That's a fucking disaster movie.
It's a space disaster.
Yeah, it's actually a space horror movie. Yeah, let's be honest. It is. It's a sci-fi horror movie.
But, I mean, little Pachycephalosaurus, Vegasaurus. I would.
I don't know. I don't know anybody that doesn't like Jurassic Park
or doesn't like dinosaurs. Right? Like that. If dinosaurs came back,
creationists.
Yeah, that's true.
Catholics. I don't think they wait. Let me correct that. They don't hate dinosaurs. I think they just don't like the prescribed narrative right now.
Number two, which is getting a reboot. Twister.
Well, it's not getting a reboot. It's getting a sequel.
Oh, is it a sequel?
It's Twisters.
Like Aliens.
Yeah, it's Twisters. I wonder if someone I'm pretty sure Ellen Hunt's in it.
That's amazing.
Here, let's IMDb this shit.
Did you enjoy Twister the first time you saw it?
Yes, I was super fucking baked.
Look,
when I went
we
saw
have
it.
Cows. Nope, same cow.
Oh, it's not actually. It's not. They're an update to the 96.
Reboot.
So it is a reboot.
Fuck.
Motherfucker.
But I mean, it can a requel is what it is. It's where they're rebooting the series by using the sequel format.
Yeah.
Because if she's in it, then we're talking same universe.
Well, the problem is like so many of the characters from the original have passed, right?
Do you have the balls to be a storm chaser like Hunt and
Bill Paxton?
Like, could you do it? Chrissy's
or Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Or Philip Seymour. Food.
You know what? It's just a fun movie, and I love that scene where the twister's coming at the very end, and they go into that shed, and the shed is just full of the sharpest fucking tools ever, like scythes and like knives, and you're just like this. Everyone in the theater just goes like this.
Pitchforks
like,
everywhere.
No!
How do you like? What are the odds, right? What are the odds? Tell me the odds.
The CGI was really well done in that too.
It was.
It's I think is it the same director that did Speed?
Who did? So
it's kind of cut from the same cloth as the movie Speed.
Jan de Bont.
No, I don't think.
Director,
I don't think so. But you know how like Speed was like the first movie that was just like it starts and just fucking goes the whole time.
Yeah.
Twister is very similar. Like it's got a few slow parts at the beginning and then it just fucking just goes.
Well, it opens on her being a kid with the big F5.
That's right.
And then flash forward to her now.
Yeah.
Going through a divorce.
Yeah.
And then she's still chasing. He's now a weatherman.
Yeah.
Brings his new fiance on the road.
Yeah,
she just loses her mind.
Yeah.
Like it's such a redeemable movie. It gives you something every time you watch it. All the characters are fun. And a twister happens all the time.
Yeah.
Out of all of these things, I mean, earthquakes happen. Tsunamis only happen because of earthquakes.
Well, the United States gets more tornadoes than anywhere else in the world.
We are the tip of Tornado Alley, my friend. That's why we've had a few in the last couple of years.
Yeah. Well, it's moved up as the Earth's orbit changes. And,
so does the trajectory.
And we get a little bit more solar energy, which we've gotten over the last 100 years. Mm-hmm. And you know, then that causes a warming of the Earth,
which changes the cell structure,
which pushes the tornadoes a little bit further north.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Chrissy,
you mean it has nothing to do with CO2? Crazy.
Chrissy Troy's boyfriend Colin is a storm chaser.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, like he's went to a school and learned how to like approach and found that big one that was like had video of that big one that was.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool. Too.
What's the number one on this list?
It's Titanic.
Of course. One of the third biggest grossing movie of all time. One of the biggest man-made disasters of our time. It's all about arrogance and hubris. How would this ship sink? Just
have you heard the theory behind this, though?
Tell me.
Okay. So the Titanic is actually, there's a sister ship to the Titanic called the Olympic.
Okay.
Okay. And the Olympic, both were owned by J.P. Morgan.
Oh boy.
Because J.P. Morgan owned the Titanic, and or was one of the main investors.
Interesting.
And apparently, the Olympic had received some damage and nobody would insure it. So what they did is they actually rebranded the Olympic the Titanic, and rebuilt the Titanic, but actually turned it into the Olympic, and then sent the Olympic across the iceberg alleyway, right? So it would sink so then they could get the insurance money for the Olympic. Yeah. Here's another crazy thing about this. So apparently J.P. Morgan and a few other and the Rockefellers were supposedly had seats and tickets to go on the Titanic. And right before
I've
it
heard
left,
this one. Yeah.
They decided not to board. And there was this other guy that died on the Titanic that was like some massive like stock investor or something. And then he passed away and they were able to basically get into the into this niche of financial things that they weren't able to get into because this guy was there. I don't know the whole story behind it, but I don't know. It's interesting all this stuff comes out.
The idea of this Lord of War mentality of painting a different name on the side of a ship so that you can collect some insurance money interests me. I mean, that is what people do, right?
Like, well, if you think J.P. Morgan was a fucking nice guy, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
He's a robber baron.
He's
just like, you know?
Railroads and oil lines.
You know why the Carnegies gave so much fucking money? Because they spilled so much blood getting that fucking rich and having their steel empire. They had to become philanthropists to be able to
change
sleep
the narrative
at night.
Yeah.
Kind of
yeah.
like a fucking Buffett or a Bill Gates. Well, Bill Gates is a philanthropist, just get more rich. But
tax brackets and charities.
Well, think about in the late 90s, early 2000s. He was so hated. And what he did is he hired a PR firm to basically create the Bill Gates Foundation, rebranded his whole thing, and then for like the last 20 years, people were like, Bill Gates is just a rich guy, but you know what? He does all this good work with like, you know, mosquito nets and fucking vaccines and all this kind of shit. Then COVID happens and now everyone's like, fuck this guy. Largest fucking agricultural landowner in the United States, all this other crazy shit, and you're just like,
Would you
pushing fucking fake meat and fucking bugs and all that shit?
Would you give up your spot on the boat if you were on the Titanic? Would you be one of those people who's like,
I would make the fucking bitch move over because there's room on the fucking raft.
Yeah,
there's room on the fucking door.
Yeah.
Listen, Rose, move the fuck over. On the fucking door.
Did you see that they did the documentary?
Yeah, where they like fucking analyze, is there enough fucking room? And you're just like, Rose is terrible.
Rose is such a selfish bitch. We could have had Jack and Rose. She could have had it all.
Yeah, then they could have, and then she wouldn't have felt so guilt-stricken, and they could have actually like taken it apart and fucking fenced it properly.
I don't know if Titanic deserves to be number one.
I don't think it does.
Like,
it's a good disaster movie, but
It's there because of who made it. It's there because of who's in it.
It's epically made. The fact that he made like that like massive miniature and like had that custom fucking water tank
right,
built.
Like
and,
the thing that would like and that's
it was
all,
the most expensive movie ever made at the time.
400 people living in like a small Nova Scotia town.
Didn't it cost $200 million to fucking make?
Which is a billion now.
And everyone was just like it's gonna lose money and James Cameron was like, hold my beer and like, you know, like
I think the only disaster that truly occurred was the
He's made the most expensive movie like four times, eh?
That's all he does. He's like, I'm gonna make the most expensive movie.
Like, I'm gonna make Terminator, then I'm gonna make Aliens. I'm going to make fucking The Abyss. Then I'm going to make Titanic. Then I'm going to fucking make fucking Avatar. Go suck a dick. The new Avatar's meh, though.
Have you heard the story about the chef?
No.
So,
The chef on what?
The chef on Titanic.
Like on the movie set?
Yeah.
Oh, no. What happened?
So, Bill Paxton and the chef did not get along. That's the nice way to say it. They did not get along. And this was ongoing. So
it's a good thing Bill Paxton has a tiny role.
So the chef.
But he's also James Cameron boy. So you got to be careful.
Yeah, they go. He's in everything he's done. You go back.
I mean, he's motherfucking Hudson, yo.
Yeah. We're all going to fucking die, man.
We're all going to die. We should just make her the.
But the story goes that the chef was getting fed up with Paxton. So he decided, fuck this show. I'm going to screw everybody. So he spikes the clam chowder with PCP. And this is the day that James decides to go eat with the cast, like a 300 plus cast living in this small buttfuck town, either Newfoundland or Nova Scotia at the time. So everybody's eating the clam chowder and they all start to have these effects.
Yeah.
So they all go to this like 3-bedroom hospital in this small town en masse because they're all like, we're losing our mind. They all get there. James Cameron's there. Paxton's there. And the nurses are like, yep, we're just going to have to take some time or whatever. So James looks over at Bill. He's like, well, what are you going to do? He's like, I'm going to go ride this out by myself. Goes and buys a case of beer and leaves. So, yeah.
That's where the idea for Big Love came from.
Sure. Yeah. Let's make a show about polygamy.
I actually didn't mind that show.
I liked it.
It was okay.
It was an eye open. I mean, yeah. Better than Seven Wives and Me or whatever this reality
show. I think the Mormons were just like,
pearls. So there you have it, listener. There's a movie that you thought that should have been on this list, or one that you think is a great disaster movie that you want to recommend to us that we can chew apart on the show for our next episode. Please do so. There's a voicemail line in the show notes. You just click on it. It takes you right to, I can't remember the name, but we switched over to a new one. It gives you multiple 30-second timelines to just keep recording. So just record one and say, oh, I'm going to keep going. If you want to say something long, if 30 seconds is enough. We would love fan engagement. We would love to hear from you. We would love to put you on the show. We will not embarrass you in any way, so don't feel nervous about doing that. This is all about uplifting everybody and everything that we do. That being said, that's it. That's the week. That's the show. That's us. We hope you liked it. Me and Mark and Rob are going to get into some AI coming soon. To a podcast near you. We're going to talk about how AI is portrayed in film, how AI is being used in film. We're going to do a pro versus con approach to it. We're going to see where it can fit, where it shouldn't fit, where rights are stomped on, all that stuff. So before you even know that episode is coming, know that
a true disaster.
That's a true disaster in and of itself. We just want you to know that no matter how it affects the film industry, we love what you guys do, and it should complement. I think we all agree that it should complement.
Ultimately, I hope it's going to become just like a powerful tool.
Yes.
To just
like CGI, you know, was a tool, right?
It's going to be. I'm hoping it's going to become like a democratizing tool, yeah. Right? But I also worry on some my scary fucking evil
lizard brain
like goes to the place where it's just going to, you know, become this scary derivative bullshit that just gets pumped out and it becomes like propaganda tool.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah. That being said, the only way you can stay in the know to listen to stuff like that is if you subscribe to the podcast. So whatever device you're listening to this on, hit follow, like, subscribe, stay in the know, put us in your podcast player. We'll be there almost each and every week. You can find out about trivia, live events, live recordings, Comic-Con, interviews that we do, all that stuff. That's just by subscribing to the show. And then pick Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube if you want to see us. YouTube's how to watch us. So is Facebook and Instagram, too. But, I mean, we love YouTube subscribers. That's where the way of the world's going. So subscribe to our YouTube page. Also in the show notes, I've been Michael.
This is Rob.
And we're a disaster. Watch all the movies. See you next week. Say bye.
Bye-bye.
If you have any problems, dial information. Thank you for calling.